The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now I'm joined by two absolute Mayo legends of football, Cora Staunton, former Mayo footballer, coach, mentor, also someone who soldiered in foreign fields in Australia, Padraig O'Hara, Mayo footballer, mental health and neurodivergent advocate. Good morning and welcome to you both.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks very much.
I'm the visitor here, and I'm welcoming you guys. It's great to have you here on the programme. Cora, if people had never watched a game of ladies' football, they might not have heard of you, but you are an absolute legend in the game. Your list of trophies and achievements is monumental.
Yeah, I suppose, I'm retired now, finished in Australia probably 18 months ago. Yeah, but probably soldiered for a long time, I suppose, with Mayo. I played 24 years at senior level with them, started when I was 13. And then obviously going to Australia to play professional sport, playing AFL. And six seasons over there, yeah. So I was lucky in my sport.
You did everything. But I remember listening to you talking on Off the Ball, and you were talking about being so precocious. I mean, you were young and playing well above your years.
Yeah, I suppose I was lucky enough. I was very talented when I was younger, and I had people that pushed me, in particular a male school principal at the time when ladies' sport wasn't very popular. He pushed me, and you know, I was just lucky then, as I said, joined the senior team as a 13 and a half year old and kind of went on from there. And I suppose, yeah, I was talented, but I suppose a lot of hard work along the way as well.
And your decision to go to Australia, what was it? Was it that you've done everything here, nothing more to do, or was it just, I want to do something different?
I don't even know really what it was at the time. I was just asked over for a trial. It was kind of spur of the moment thing, went over, had it, got accepted. Came back, Carnacun were still in championship. Carnacun went on to win the All-Ireland, and 2 days after the All-Ireland kind of flew to Australia. And I kind of decided I'd do it for a year, you know, challenge myself. Sports people love challenges, and kind of recognised that I could be good at this. And yeah, kind of done six seasons over there. And I suppose the lure of playing professional sport, I suppose as a young person growing up, the opportunity for females to play professional sport wasn't there. I always thought I was going to be Roy Keane and play for Manchester United. So I suppose at 35 to get the opportunity to play professional sport and challenge yourself at a really high level.
What was it like at the regime compared to your training regime here? I mean, you trained hard when you were here, but you know, you expected to go up a level?
It's not that you're expected to go up a level, you just have time. I suppose, you know, as people know here, you know, GAA players are working 9 to 5 or whatever their daily routine might be, and you're expected to fit everything in there. In Australia, your job was just to play sports, so you had plenty of time to get better, whether you know it was skills or physically or whatever, and then you had the time to recover. So you could put all your energies into it, where a GAA player has to work 35, 39 hours before they go and spend probably another 30 hours playing the sport. So, yeah, I was just very lucky and fortunate to get over there, and I suppose kind of set a path for other Irish girls. When I went there, I was the first Irish person over there, and you know the season starts in a couple of weeks. There's now 37 girls will take
37 girls over
37
there.
Girls will take the the fields over the next kind of number of weeks.
How was it socially when you arrived there? Were you a fish out of water, or was there a welcome on the mat?
I don't think there was a welcome on the mat. It's probably where's this one coming, and you know, taking a spot in our list. I suppose I had to earn the respect. I probably went from being high profile here and being at the top of my game now to being at the bottom of the tree and have to try and work up in terms of performance. So, yeah, the first while was daunting, and I suppose the only way I could earn the respect of my teammates was working hard and putting in a lot of hard work. And, you know, that's what I did. And, you know, I played kind of in my first match probably 8 weeks after I went out there and performed quite well. And I suppose that's when the tide turned. The scene I could do something, and the respect was earned then.
Yeah. What about at that level of the game, professional football, injuries more prone to you? Or?
Yeah, I my list coming home. So when you retire, you meet with your doctor to for your list of injuries for, you know, when you're retired, say where we are at. Yeah. So I broke my leg quite badly out there in four places, and in my second year there, and was told I'd be lucky if I get back walking at a proper level, never mind jogging or running. But, I'm a pretty determined person, and not much had stopped me. So, yeah, kind of 5.5 months after I broke my leg, I came home for a couple of weeks to Mayo and played in a county final with Carnacun, and luckily enough, we won it. So then went back out and played another couple of seasons out there.
Now, that injury, which could have been career-ending, you had to kind of learn to walk again.
Yeah, I suppose that was the biggest. It was, you know, physically I didn't mind the challenge. It was mentally. I've had injuries. You know, I tore my ACL when I was younger, but this injury was, you know, very different. You know, learning to walk. I was walking with a limp for a long time, so learning to walk, learning to hop, just the basic things, climbing up and down the stairs, and obviously back jogging and all that. So yeah, it was very difficult. Mentally, I found it very difficult because I was obviously away from home, no family support in terms of that. So. Yeah, I'm quite a driven person. You know, I had probably a number of people doubting would have come back. I was 37 at that stage. You know, probably why you could injure your career or finish your career then. I wasn't happy to finish it then, and I had a lot of people doubt me. So I recognised through that period of time I'm motivated by people telling me I can't do something. So when they tell me I can't do something, yeah, I suppose then I was going to prove that I could. So yeah, lucky I came back, as I said, played with Kearney Cunningham, played another 5 seasons after that out there.
You're an extraordinary woman, absolutely extraordinary. You're determined and all your achievements, but what is the general state of the ladies' game now?
Yeah, I think it's in good health, you know, in terms of the Australian thing, and it's, you know, it's probably hard for me to talk about it because I was probably the one that started the trend. But yeah, I worry a little bit, obviously, with the amount of females going to Australia. As I said, there's 37 Gaelic footballers that are now playing in Australia, and these are our top players that could be playing in the game. But no, it's strong. It's, you know, 50 years this year, the final on obviously this weekend. There's a lot of young girls that now are playing the game, you know, from a very young age, you know, 4, 5 and 6. And that wasn't happening when I was playing. You know,
what about the facilities that are available for girls?
Yeah, it's a lot more. You know, obviously integration is down the line. Gerald Burns in 2027. So I think when that happens, and I think the game will even grow more and more, because, you know, at times, you know, and certainly throughout my career, and even now, we're, you know, you play second fiddle to the men's game. So, you know, I have a hope and dream that, you know, maybe in 4 or 5 years' time that the ladies football All-Ireland will be before the men's All-Ireland, and they get to run out in front of 2,500, because the train is hard, and young girls growing up need to have, you know, to see that there's something to strive to.
Exactly. Often matches are scheduled at odd times.
Yes, odd times and in poor venues and different things like that. And I suppose you want to promote the game, you want to get younger girls playing, you want girls that are 3, 4 and 5 to want to strive to something. I suppose, again, when I was younger, I didn't have any female role models. The good thing is now, when girls turn on the telly, no matter what sport, there's so many role models. You look over at the Olympics, you look in GAA. So I think that's the most important thing for me, that young girls now can see it where they couldn't back in my time.
Yeah, you can't do it if you don't see it. That's
exactly,
for sure.
Yeah.
Now, you're still active because you're coaching your man's team here, Pádraig's team. Is that so?
She is, surely. She's doing a mighty fine job of it too.
Yeah, how is the club?
Good. Yeah, look, we had a very successful year last year. Won the first county title in a number of years, especially since I kind of came around the scene in senior. And then we've obviously got the addition of Cora this year. We had a poor season with Mayo, but it does let you come home to your club a little bit earlier. So
that's not what you want, though, really. No, no.
No, it's not. It certainly isn't. But like, you don't get to make these choices, I suppose. You're dealt the hand you're dealt, and Mayo finished. I looked at the time I have at home. I suppose I have a few little ones at home, so I got to spend a bit more time there and get back to the club.
Yeah,
club
you've got 3 children, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. Just
kind of keep you busy.
Plenty busy there to kind of build on what Cora said too. I have 2 little girls coming up. One who's playing football in Ballina at the moment. She's 6 with Kilmore Moy. They played a game last night, and that was never even a thing when I was playing as a teenager. The girls always played with us up until about 13, and then they went over. You know, the demand wasn't there, the volunteers weren't there. So even in Ballina, you have seen the difference in women in sport. So it's great.
Now, I think it's fair to say that football saved you.
Well, yeah, you could certainly put it that way, all right. I think it saves an awful lot of people, to be honest. I think sport is a safe space for young lads and ladies to develop. It doesn't have to be GAA. But when I look around, I work in youth justice and in mental health services, so you can really see the difference between young people that stay engaged in a sport or a community-based activity, be that drama, music, whatever it is, that you have a connection to your community and a purpose when you get out of bed in the morning. So I do, yeah. Look,
yeah, I was reading about your encounter with the guard, the junior liaison officer, and how that was a turning point. You know, there's always, when you get you know, someone intervening in someone's life, you can actually point the finger and say, that was a moment.
Yeah, you can remember it really, really well. And look, there was loads of people. To be honest, my mother dragged me through most of it, if it wasn't for her, you know. But I do, I remember Tommy Lyon so very well that day, and I'm kind of laying the land for me. Stay in football, straighten up, life can be good. Don't. And
how would you characterise yourself at that time?
Just incredibly lively, do you know.
He still is, Pat.
Is that the fair way to put it? There's nobody here to question me, so I'm sound. Look, I was an at-risk young person. I grew up with a bit of an attitude, unbelievably hyperactive, struggled, do you know, would have been involved in alcohol.
I mean,
would
you have been diagnosed as ADHD at that time?
Oh, 100%. I got diagnosed later years.
But you weren't at the time?
No, for one reason or another. But I wouldn't even go back and blame anything on that. That's just who you are and part of.
They just say he's a tearaway.
I was just very, very lively, yeah. and I just seemed to find trouble, do you know. My mum used to always point at lads and go, they're not good for you, they'll get you in bother. She didn't realise it was me getting everybody in bother, really, do you know. But I still enjoyed it. I certainly enjoyed it. We had like a wonderful childhood and teenage years growing up. We grew up a little bit different here in Ballina. Even when I explain some of the stories to the lads in Mayo, you can kind of see them looking around wondering where you actually grew up. But yeah, good times.
Anyway, that football kind of kept you together. You found a new community and that became, you know, a hugely important part of your life then.
Yeah, look, we were constantly playing football. It kept you off the streets, you know, and it kept you in good company. There was guys that were striving to do certain things with their lives. They had ambition. You talked about role models earlier. To have people in your life that you could look up to and say, well, he's done X or Y and that's brought him to a certain place. I got to look at a lot of the senior footballers in the club and I was impressed by them. And you wanted to do what they've done and you could see the kind of path. So
now, I mentioned at the beginning that you're an advocate for neurodivergency. What does that actually mean?
Yeah, I kind of fell into a few different roles. That being one of them, look, I ended up working in disability and autism services specifically for a number of years and just kind of fell in love with it, really fell in love with the community and the people, felt at home. And that's actually probably where I started to get the little push to realise that maybe I was actually more comfortable in this community than I was in the general pop.
Yeah.
And there's a few people at staff I used to work with that actually said, maybe you are more of a service user than anything. And we used to get a good laugh out of it. But I fell in love with all the people we worked with and it kind of drove us on, me and a friend, to do a lot more in regards to community service and stuff. So we set up a community group here that tries to provide more access to opportunities and services for people of intellectual disabilities and that kind of neurodivergent community.
Now, you mentioned that you were diagnosed formally with ADHD later on as an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, is it worth, if someone suspects that when they look back at their teen years, that they may have had ADHD or been affected by it, do you think they should still go for a diagnosis as an adult?
People disagree heavily on this and like I think it's personal. Did I need a diagnosis for ADHD? No. I knew it. But like it's kind of like when you pick up the phone to ring somebody for counsel. You know you have the answer, but you want clarity. You want to hear it maybe from somebody else. And it was very powerful for me. In fairness, it was a lovely lady called Amanda McGuinness who works with As I Am, the autism charity, who said it to me. She said, get the diagnosis, because she got a late diagnosis too, because she said it'll give you peace of mind, it'll give you clarity. And it did. So personally, yes, I think it is valuable. But in regards to services, the only value of a diagnosis really would be as a child.
Now, you like to set yourself challenges. You've got a mountainy challenge next year.
I'm considering it, all right, yeah. I'm always, much like Cora now, just always looking to do different bits and bobs. I'm kind of trying to pair up with a mate of mine, Jason Black, to go and climb up a big hill.
A big hill called Aconcagua.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of the top seven peaks, isn't it?
Oh, it's plenty big, yeah. There's no point going up a small hill, but.
Anyway, hopefully you'll be doing that and doing it for a fabulous charity, Laura Lynn.
Yeah, well, I'm fortunate enough again to tie in with Laura Lynn and all the work they've done. For those that don't know, please go and check them out. It's possibly one of the most fabulous places I've ever visited. Incredible, incredible people. So any time I get an opportunity to kind of raise funds or anything, they're the first I think of. So
I should conclude by asking you, life lessons for young people listening in, Cora. Anything that you would say that would maybe inspire something?
Yeah, well, I think for me, and Padraig touched on it as well, I think stay involved in something that you're passionate about. It doesn't have to be a sport. It doesn't have to be GAA, soccer, rugby. It can be anything. But if you're passionate about something and you love it, I think, you know, it never feels like work. So I, for me, it'd be stay involved in something. Find something that you love. It can take time. You mightn't find it as a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old. You might find it in your 20s. But when you find it, you know, go after it and keep passionate about it. Because I think there's a lot of social pressures on young people today. Growing up, you know, you see with the whole social media where it's very difficult to deal with it. But if you stay passionate or find something that you're passionate and find your group, I think that'll always keep you on the straight and narrow. And for me, it's been sport, it's been GAA, it's been AFL. But that's what I found I was passionate about. That's where my group of people are, and they're my circle of people that I trust.
That's your tribe.
Exactly.
That's your tribe. And Padraig?
Yeah, I double down on that, in fairness. She's hit the nail on the head. But I suppose one piece I would mention, especially working in kind of mental health services, is that, like, everybody has incredibly difficult days, and sometimes things just don't go to plan. Sometimes the world hits you splat in the face. But it's just a message out to young people there is to persevere, to stick at it, that, you know, these days do come and they do pass too, and that there's an awful lot of help if you're willing to look for it or just pick up the phone. So just so that people know that.
Padraig O'Hara and Cora Staunton, thank you very, very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.